It's Petzl 30.
And what does that mean, Scott?
Put your head torch on and go out and run.
Now, we just got done interviewing or having a discussion with Marcus Warner.
From Ultra168.com.
And we learned that 168 really originated from 168 hours available in each week. And there's always time to run.
There is, if you have a head torch.
And that's the beauty of the torch. It allows you to start early, start late, go into the evening.
It's Petzl's way of daylight savings time.
You know, we you're right. You save the day, and you can stretch it out with your Petzl. That's good,
you
Scott.
You can.
Yeah. You know, when we talked about it a while back, and I think it's worth repeating because, well, sometimes you don't have everything to say, so you repeat stuff. And we learned from John Evans of Petzl that you put a head torch on the end of a long stick, and you can raise it up, and a complete group could run with one headlamp. And I thought that was just
Did he say that?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Well, that's why I'm repeating it.
Okay.
So, but that's a way to save a group. You know, if one person is prepared, one Boy Scout in the group, and you need to somehow get back to wherever you need to go.
It probably would be much better with a Petzl head torch because they have the lumen.
And it depends on which head torch you get. There's 200 lumen, 370 lumen, 500 lumen. I mean, there's enough lumen for a whole group of people.
A gaggle. So, go to Petzl.com, check out all their head torches. Make sure you get one that is best for you. Get a rechargeable. Get one that has the reactive lighting. They're the leaders in head torches.
Ultra Running Magazine, Scott.
It is a magazine that I have been reading since before I ran my first ultra.
It's a feast for the eyes.
It's a great tutorial. It's a great way to do research about ultra running. They have the leaders in sports psychology, sports nutrition. They have veterans that are writing articles. It's just a wealth of knowledge. They have lots of gear reviews. They have
race results.
They have listings of races that are coming up. It's just a great magazine. If you haven't subscribed, you should. It's just a great magazine. In fact, right now they have a promo going. What is that promo?
$29.95 for a complete year subscription delivered to your home.
Wow.
I mean, you don't have to go somewhere to pick it up. They'll bring it to you.
You know what? I just subscribed. I didn't know about the deal. I paid $39.99.
Scott, it's still worth it at $39.
It is. Go to our partners link on our website, trailrunnernation.com. Click on the link. That will take you to ultrarunning.com, and you can subscribe.
And if you go there, you'll be sure to get that discount and not pay the extra 10 like you did, Scott.
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I am Scott War. And today, we are talking down under.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Way down. And when I think down under, how far down are you talking, Scott?
As far as you can go, I think.
It's
I don't know. I've never been. It's New Zealand, right, Marcus?
You're pretty close. You're probably upset.
Australia, Sydney. Sydney's in Australia. That goes to show you how dumb I am.
I think it's like comparing us to Canadians from your side of the hemisphere. So, yeah, you want to be very careful calling me a New Zealander when I'm here, an Englishman living in Australia.
I think there's a song about that. Oh, no, that's Englishman in New York.
Now, many of you may recognize Marcus. He is from ultra168.com. And I ask him, what exactly is Ultra168.com. Give us a little background. Is it a blog? Is it a website? Is it a country of its own? And you are about to give us the answer. And we said, hold on, let's have you tell everybody what it is. So give us a little background, Marcus.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We're basically a couple of English guys who met on the trails, got together, and basically at the end of the day, a few of our friends wanted to follow us, our antics, our running antics, and We started to write about it. It turned into a bit of a blog. It was very amateur to start with. We had a few opinions. We bumped into people on trails, and we sort of started to characterize them. We started to write about it. Before we knew it, it became a little bit more professional. Dan and I have a bit of a social media marketing background, so we did a bit of an overhaul. And before we knew it, these big brands around the world reached out to us and said, "Hey, guys, can you come over to Europe or the US and cover a race? Because it looks like you've got a, you know, a good voice in Asia and Australia." And suddenly we've evolved and blossomed into Ultra 168. But at our heart, we haven't really moved away from the fact that we're two old, fat English guys who have strong opinions on the trail running scene and the ultra running scene. And I think at the end of the day, basically, sum it up, if Dan and I can't meet up with our mates and go for a run, if the website becomes between the two of us, then we'd give the website up before we give up running. So that's how we've evolved.
Nice.
There's a lot of similarities.
What's
between
that?
Trail Runner Nation, we're two fat guys. Well, we're one fat guy and one in-shape guy.
We're not going to tell you which one's in shape because we never know who it is. We trade off.
So I'm curious, what does Ultra 160, where did that name come from?
Yeah, that's something we get asked a lot. You know, is it Ultra 168, Ultra 168? What does it stand for? Is it a brand? What is it? Simply, there's 168 hours in a week. And, you know, Dan and I are in, you know, we've got busy careers. We try to find some time to get out and get into shape. And when you're running ultra runs, some of these bigger runs, like 100 milers, you can't wing them. You can't just turn up and expect to get through. So we always struggle to find time like everyone else. And people say, "Well, how on earth do you find the time to run 100 miles? And they say, "Well, there's 168 hours in every week. Ultimately, you know, you're going to find time somewhere in that 168 hours to go out for a run. So there's always time for running, in our opinion. That's where the name came from, and it stuck.
Well, I like it. I like that term 168. Now I can put some context to it and totally get it. So what's interesting to me, before we jump into the what drew us to this podcast,
topic.
Yeah, because it's a great topic, is that you guys went from, you know, having some fun on a trail and blogging and having some fun to getting invited to cover races. Draw that out for me. How do I go from a podcast to being invited to another continent to cover a race?
He wants to go down under. Marcus.
Yeah.
He wants to take a trip to Sydney
or anywhere, even New Zealand. I'd even go there.
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's something we, you know, sometimes jealousy and envy can be quite a powerful motivator, and a lot of people want to try to imitate us. And it's like, well, ultimately where we came from, it was timing. We started out about the same time as people like Brian Powell at iRunFi, Ian Coolis at Talk Ultra, you guys. We all sort of got in on the scene at the early on as the elevator was heading north with the sport booming. And I think what ultimately allowed us, though, to get a bit of a global audience is we stuck to that true thing. We've always had an opinion. So we don't tend to just do a race preview. We'll look at those people who are really trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. If they're not in shape, we'll call it as it is. We'll make some pretty bold predictions. And I think that sort of resonated. And it resonated mostly with the Europeans to start with, because they're, you know, the French and the Spaniards, the Italians, they're known for their opinions, and they'll let the rest of the world know it. And that's really ultimately where we were invited in, because we were able to bring that European feel, take it to the rest of the world, and give people an opinion. And as with most things in life, Dan and I will happily say the same things to people if we met them face to face. You know, as we know in the social media world, people get quite powerful behind a keyboard. And the one thing we know is we're very privileged. We're in a position, if we are invited to a race overseas to cover it, we're in a privileged position because we're providing, you know, the eyes and ears for the audience around the world to see what we're seeing. And we try to bring that to life. But at the same time, you're going to get a little bit of spiciness, a little bit of controversy mixed in. So that's where we're a little bit different to the others.
You know, as we've watched this sport grow, have you seen that it's growing about the same rate or pace or with the same timing there in Europe and in the United States? Do you see there's a parallel with growth, or is one ahead of the other?
Yeah, that's a really good observation. I think you could look at it across the three main zones of the world. I think in the US versus Europe, there's always a bit of rivalry, and the Europeans, when they come and race in the US, they seem to do quite well, but the US runners are struggling to race in the real hardcore alpine races. And then you've got this enormous Asian market, and we're sitting, you know, Australia, even though we're a westernized colony, We are very much an Asian country, and you're seeing the sport explode here in Asia at the moment. I was up in China last month at the Skyrunning Championships, and I've never seen so many newly rich Chinese who are out pursuing social pursuits. So I think the US is not moving, I don't believe, as fast. I think you are coming from a deeper, longer base. You obviously started the ultra running scene, the trail running scene with races such as Western States. Europe is evolving and fragmenting really rapidly into sort of very niche. So you've got sky running versus the ultra tour races. You've got fell running. You've got old school races that have been around a long time that aren't going to change at all. They're just small villages who once a year put on a race, and it's the fastest man or woman to the top and back. And then you've got Asia, which is sort of where we're sitting, which is basically bling. It's getting very blingy. It's sort of, you know, there's big gloss. You go to a race in Asia, and there are more photographers and media and people with selfie sticks than runners. It's extremely, you know, European athletes and American athletes are put on pedestals. I've never seen anything like it. It's like being a rock star when you go to Asia. So they're evolving at different way in different ways and at different speeds, I think.
What do you think the most popular distance is over in Europe and in the three realms that you're talking about, the three stages?
Yeah, look, I think in Europe, the racing is very much, there are so many shorter races, the sort of real hardcore mountain trail races where traditionally these villages have been around for hundreds of years. You start at the clock tower or outside the church or outside the local tavern, and you run to the top of a peak and back again. That's pretty much what I see a lot of when we're in Europe. And those are the races that get the big crowds, that get the local villages and the local town heroes racing up against, you know, the people from the next valley. And there's lots of rivalry. Whereas my trips to the US have always been for the big 100-milers. You've got more 100-milers in some of your individual states than we would have in the whole of Australia or New Zealand put together. In fact, this year, New Zealand won't have a single 100-miler, and we've only got 300-milers in all of Australia. And I don't think there's any 100-milers yet in Asia to speak of that would draw big crowds. So I think looking at the three different zones, you're big with the 100-milers and the big ultra trail races. Europe's these fast, quickest to the top and back again. And Asia's still very much a juvenile. It's still coming to terms with what is the best distance. And they're trying to put out everything for everybody. And so that's where I think we'll see it will fragment and evolve slightly differently.
That's great commentary. What great observation.
You know, it sounds like you have a really good handle on the different continents and where they're going to with ultra running. Who has the craziest or silliest gear? Who has the shortest shorts and who has the gear that you go, okay, that's freaking weird.
I can guarantee if you want to see the biggest throwback to the 80s and neon and tight lycra, go and race in Italy. without a shadow of doubt, the old headbands, the day glow colors, the lycra that's probably seen better days, so slightly baggy or either or that, the runner has lost a little bit of weight since they last bought it. You're still seeing that real something. It's a throwback to, you know, one of the original MTV video clips of something from fame. They're very good. The French are probably second only to that in terms of they have some pretty garish colors. The Italians, I think they're in a class of their own. They're known for their sartorial elegance when they're sitting in a cafe in Rome or in Venice. But boy, you put them on the side of a mountain and those guys can light up the side of the mountain without a head torch. They're the most garish. I think the craziest in terms of atmosphere have to be the Asian runners. They really just get worked up into a frenzy. The Japanese especially, they get carried away just in the hype before the race even starts. They burn off thousands of calories with just the cheering and the excitement. I think if you wanted to look at the Americans in terms of their outfits, they're pretty much cookie cutter. I think there's a lot of plaid shirts, a lot of checks. I mean,
you sound like you watched a Western movie.
Yes, you guys all look pretty similar. Australians, we're a blend. Australians don't take themselves too seriously, so they're happy. You'll never see an Australian dressed in all white lycra speed suit like you might see in France or Italy. unless it's for a bet that would be done over maybe no more than a beer or a steak.
And I want to be careful about this question, and we have stayed far and away from this topic.
Ooh, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair. What are you going to ask?
And I don't want any names or speculation. I just kind of want. I feel you have such a sense of where the sport is on a global aspect, and how it may relate to other sports. Are you ready for the question?
I've
drawn it out as long as I can. In cycling, we know that steroids and some performance enhancing drugs are present. Do you see our sport ever being affected by this, or a fear of that, or is it going to wind its way into this as well? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Look, it's a question we get asked every day. In fact, I'm in the mountains this weekend to do some training, and I bumped into a cyclist who's an ex-pro, and he said, I take it your sport will be following down the road of cycling, and there'll be drugs in the sport. And I said, what makes you say that as an observer? Is it because you're so tarnished with drugs in your own sport that you think everybody else is doing the same? And he goes, no, I'm seeing a number of cyclists crossing over into trail running, and surely they'll bring their habits.
Wow.
And I sort of sit there going, it's a sad day when we actually start looking along the sort of start line of a race. And if you're good enough, you're usually in that first wave of the first two or three deep on the front of the row. And if you're looking at that at a start line and you're judging people on what stuff they're taking, it's sad. And it, unfortunately, I do believe there are already drugs in the sport. Mm. I have a science background. I understand the physiology of what these drugs can do. I've worked in that industry for a while, not in terms of specific performance enhancing drugs, but I know that drugs are capable of improving performance dramatically. And the sport itself is very slow to jump on board proper testing. And that's for a reason that's probably more a commercial reason. It's so expensive to test to the levels that athletes are willing to go to cheat. So I think a long way of answering, yes, there are athletes, I would imagine, in our sport, the same in any other sport, that will be cheating to try to get a better result. I think that's more a reflection of society rather than the sport itself. The sport needs to understand that this is going to become a problem in the future. And it needs to deal with it in a way that I think only trail running can deal with it. And I think trail running has a more of a community feel where we will judge each other. And I think we'll keep each other honest. And that's what I'm hoping for. That's what keeps me honest. That's what gets me out of bed at 4:30 in the morning to go run up a mountain to train, just to try to hold my own in my own age group. I think that's what I hope most of the elite athletes who are trying to make a living out of this sort of fledgling sport will want to see the sport evolve like. But ultimately, I think we'd be very naive to see there aren't drugs in this sport already.
Yeah, that's a great commentary, and the community and culture will help keep it clean, and I hope that is the case too. I'm with you, but go ahead, Scott.
Let's jump to the topic. We've been dancing. Now let's talk. we came across this article entitled 18 Dumb Things Ultra Runners Say and Do. And I read through this and actually laughed out loud a bunch of times. And as I was talking to Dan, your partner in crime at Ultra 168, and then I started reading some of the comments, there's some people that took you serious. I can't believe that anybody would read this and get upset at some of these things, because it's a satirical look at ultra running, and I thought it was just hilarious. But what kind of did you get any death threats from some people?
Oh, look, the article was definitely tongue in cheek, but I do know that it doesn't matter which country, which color, creed, religion, upbringing you've come from. There is a group of people who've taken it very personally. And at the moment, there's probably a couple of states and a couple of towns in Australia. There's probably a handful of countries in Europe and definitely a few races that I won't be invited to in the US based on those comments. So we have been told a number of things. We've been told to, it's a very much an Australian expression, but to wind our neck in. How dare we bring that sort of vitriol and venom and fire to a genteel sport like ultra running? So, yes, we've had some pretty nasty comments. But I would say 99.9% of people took it for what it was, and we did caveat it. I mean, we were actually, the history behind the article is we were set up to write that because of Dan and I have a fairly strong opinion of another
sport that is exploding around the world, which is CrossFit. And that's where the article came from. We're pretty outspoken. We think it's phys ed for adults. We don't think it's anything more than that. And we always stand by it. And I'm guilty. There's pictures all over the internet of me in a CrossFit gym training like a CrossFitter. So it's not like we can't have a laugh at ourselves. So that's where it came from. But yes, there's a handful of people. Now, we're talking tens of thousands of people read the article. And there's still a handful of people who, to this day, they probably won't shake my hand. But hey, I'm going to live with that.
Well, let's go through a couple of these things, Scott. Which one jumps out at you first?
You know, there's a lot of things. The one that I actually heard just recently, and it was from a mountain bike race. There was a little neighbor kid. I shouldn't say little neighbor kid. He's a high school kid. And I saw a photo of him, and it was a podium. But there weren't three people there. There were five people on the podium. And I went, what is that? And I was told later that is the extended podium. Hmm. So there's the number one thing on Marcus's list here of 18 dumb things ultra runners say and do is I got on the extended podium. I didn't know what that was until just about a week ago because of this mountain bike race.
So Marcus, what compelled you to make that number one? Why don't you take us through your thought process?
The extended podium one. That's my favorite, actually, because I'm guilty of this one as well. I came across this expression on the internet about 18 months ago. A good colleague of ours was racing, and as you can imagine, in anything when you're riding a little bit of humor, there's an element of truth in everything you're trying to bring out. And I'm not going to name names here, and I'm not going to put people up. People know, you know, they know that this is sort of aimed at them. Somebody put up a mug they'd won at a race and said, oh, woohoo. And, they, you know, typical Facebook status update, woohoo, greatest day ever. I got on the extended podium today. I came fifth in a trail race somewhere in, you know, the deepest, darkest, remotest part of Australia. And I looked at that and went, well, you were fifth, so no one knows who won. I'd like to know who won. So that one for me, it sort of resonates is that, you know, in races, especially this has come out of Europe, and I think this is where these particular athletes, they're used to this. They're exposed to this. In Europe, you tend to get up the top 10, just up on the stage and say, here's your top 10, and now we'll get the top three up for their prizes. And I think we're finding this happens in a lot of sports now. It's trying to recognize everyone. And ultimately, if you look at the website, when you go to ultra168.com and look up this article, we've got this big poster from the US version of The Office, which says, everyone's a winner, woohoo. I just thought, you know, we're getting to a stage where we've got to have competition. Extended podiums, come on, guys. You're a fifth. So just say you're a fifth.
You know, there's a trend. I don't know if this is a worldwide trend, but there's been a trend in the United States with kids playing soccer. And at the end of the season, every kid gets a trophy. And, you know, whether they had a winning season or a losing season, every kid gets a trophy because you want every kid to feel important mm-hmm. and that they were of value and that sort of thing. I wonder if that has finally gotten to the point where everybody that competes in an ultra thinks that, you know, they should be on the podium. And one of the things that I just laughed here was why this trend is of calling up the top 5 or top 10 or top 40 runners dressed as Batman. I podiumed. I was the third fastest Batman.
Oh, look, I mean, that's the thing. The great thing we're seeing with social media and we're seeing with, you know, wearable technology and you know, people putting times up on Strava is that we are ultimately competitive. We like recognition. What I'm finding hilarious is that in trail running, because the communities are quite small, we do like to recognize everybody. And everybody has a story for while they're there. That's fine. We're not here to judge them on that. But I think when you're a reasonably decent athlete and you're known to go out there and put it on the line, the fact that you didn't have a great day, you didn't win, so be it. Congratulate the person who came first, second, or third. But we don't need to be giving medals all the way down to the, like you say, the third or fourth, fifth fastest man dressed as Batman or dressed as Wonder Woman. It's it gets a little bit silly. And I think, you know, I've been guilty. I've been up on Facebook. I put up a medal. I won when I came fifth. I was in, as I said to you guys earlier, I was in Asia racing last month, and I was second veteran. I actually won some money. I actually won a decent prize. I actually stuck it up on Facebook. I actually got something like 120 likes. It made me feel good. But then you come home and you go, geez, what a douche. Come on.
You know, I don't know if this is a worldwide thing, but one of the things, at least in the United States for 100-mile races, is if you finish in the allotted time, everybody gets a belt buckle. So it's not just the podium people that get the trophies, but if you finish in the time, 24 hours, 30 hours, 36 hours or something like that, you get a belt buckle. Is that something that happens at races around the world?
Yeah, look, I think I think when you get the belt buckle, that is actually I would challenge you on that one. I personally, I'm the owner of a Western States belt buckle. I proudly wear it. I'm wearing it today. I'd say that that's actually a pretty good badge of honor. I think people are generally able, when you're running 100 miles across some pretty robust terrain like that, I think that's a good recognition, because not everybody finishes that. Not everybody gets into the race. So the belt buckle, I think, is great. What I am starting to see, though, which is a little bit more alarming, is that they are now starting to give out belt buckles for 50K and 100K races. Mm. I don't think a belt buckle – I think I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I like the fact that if you run a major race like Hard Rock 100 or UTMB or ultimately the grandfather of all Western States 100-miler, the belt buckle, as long as you finish and you finish in the allotted time and you don't receive any outside assistance, it's all legitimate – I think that's fair, because they're giving away only around about 200 to 300 of those every year. I think when you start getting belt buckles because you've run the same fun run in your local community 5 years running and you get given a buckle for that, I think it's starting to get a little bit of a silly trend, and we all want a belt buckle. But I think you're starting to see, a bit like you do when you go, you know, you drive into a car park and you're driving, you know, a Porsche Cayman, and you can't quite afford the Porsche 911. The Porsche 911's all parked in one side of the car park and all the other smaller, lesser-known Porsches. Well, you're starting to see the same in Australia. When people walk into a bar or a restaurant or before a race and they're wearing their belt buckle, people stare at people's navels now, and they go, well, your belt buckle's a 100-miler belt buckle, so I'll stand with you because you're a real hero. But you're wearing a 5K, five-year veteran belt buckle. That's a lesser buckle. So we're starting to judge people on their buckles now. And I think, you know, we've started to be weighing them and looking at the value of the metals. And, you know, is my pewter belt buckle worth more than my aluminium one? And, yeah, it's getting a little bit silly. But I think it's a long way of answering. I think 100-milers, they deserve a belt buckle. That's a pretty big achievement. If you can finish a 100-miler, you deserve it. But I think anything less than that, I think stick to just putting sticking a badge or a, you know, gold star on them, or giving them a certificate or something.
Excuse me, I'm up here.
Sorry.
That's, yeah. Hey, so number five, and I like this one because what
I've heard you say this a number of times, Mr. Freeman.
What's the heel to toe drop on that shoe? And if it doesn't meet the low numbers, you know, it's not a shoe for me. But I want to be the first to admit, if you threw me in a shoe that was a 10 or a 12 millimeter or a 3, I wonder if I could tell the difference. I'm not so sure if I could, but I know that I only will buy or wear the shoes that are in my range that I think are the right heel to toe drop. But it's something that's emerged here in the last however many years.
You know, I think it's something that I've caught myself a number of times. I'll see some new shoes and I'll go, hey, what's the heel to toe drop on that thing?
Your dress shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, this fascination with heel to toe, and heck, you'd have to be running on completely flat ground to really, really enjoy that zero that might be out there. What if you're coming down a hill? It's pretty hard to get zero toe drop on that one. Get your heels jacked up quite a ways if your hill is steep enough, if you're vert.
You know, I'm going to jump to another one, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I thought this one was funny, too. It starts with a joke.
Okay.
An atheist, a vegan, and an ultra runner walk into a bar. I know, because they told everyone. I think that's hilarious, because evidently no one else does. But Marcus, you wrote this and you're not laughing. Give me a break.
I'm laughing, guys. This one really. I have to make a confession here. I stole that joke from a CrossFit, because it should say, a vegan, an atheist, and a CrossFitter walk into a bar. And I read that one. And that's really where the whole article came from. It was spawned by my online battles with the CrossFit community. And they're way bigger, way more muscly, and way better looking with their shirts off than any of us ultra runners are. So I was really sort of, I sort of stole that from them. So thank you to the CrossFit community for that. But it is, it's a, I love this one, because you know, it doesn't take long to sit around. You know, gone are the days where you could wear a shirt, you know, a winner's T-shirt of something old school like Hard Rock or Western States, and people would judge you, or if Death generally walk in with a buckle. But now everybody's ultra running. Everybody's looking for the next big endurance, you know, fix that they wanted to talk about. And I think we're pretty quick to sort of jump on the ultra running bandwagon and say, oh, aren't we heroes because I've just run 100 miles. Well, look, I'd be the first to admit I've run a number of 100 milers, but boy, I've probably walked 60% of them. And quite frankly, you know, it's not that hard to walk for a day. It isn't really. When you've got beautiful scenery, you're in the mountains, you're in a foreign country, there's people shouting all sorts of strange things in foreign languages to you, offering you foods you've never eaten, it's pretty motivational to keep going. And I think, you know, it is an accessible sport. I think that, being a bit serious for a moment, yes, it is. It is ultra running, and it is people's passion, and they put a lot of effort into it, and they are trying to, you know, maybe run from demons, they may be recovering from something, they may be losing weight, they may be actually very good at it. At the end of the day, we are quite big fish in small ponds. It's easy to dominate. You can generally search on the internet for an ultra race, know that you're in reasonably good shape. And if you find the right one, knowing that there's another bigger race on it either side, you can rock up there and you can win it pretty comfortably. And we see that. People game the system, and then they sit there with the spoils. So, yeah, look, it's a double-edged sword, this one, because yes, I think it's important people are running, they're getting out, they're seeing the countryside, they're embracing the camaraderie of the sport. But at the same time, we are pretty quick to ram it down people's throats that we are pretty heroic when really, I like the fact that it's an accessible sport. In fact, the great thing about ultra running and the great thing about trail running is you can start a race standing on the start line next to the world champion. I don't think there's any other running on the planet that allows you to do that. I've run the New York Marathon and I got wave 16 or something. I start 20 minutes after the people at the front, but even they start 20 minutes after the elites. The elites get a free run. You can't stand next to the elites. You can't go up and shake Paula Radcliffe's hand or Mo Farah's hand or Gabriel Selassie's hand. They're quarantined and escorted away in their VIP cars. Whereas the great thing about even the world championships of ultra running, whichever discipline you want to talk about, whether it's sky running or the ultra trail or the Euroc or whatever, is you can actually toe the line with the world championship. You can actually stand next to them. You can stand in front of them. And there's a great joke going around, you know, the only time I'm in front of the world champion is on the start line after the gun goes, playing catch up. Most of it.
Hey, I'd like to move into this one. It's okay. Number 14, and I don't expect you to memorize.
That's the one I was going to pick.
Are you? Okay.
I love this one.
Ultra running beards. Shave it off. You look like a hobo wearing $1,500 worth of stolen Solomon gear. That is just a great line. Expand on that, would you? Because I had to say your line because it's so
hilarious.
Good. So tell us about ultra running beards. Are they everywhere?
Oh, look, in Australia and New Zealand, they're everywhere. Trust me, and everybody has a beard. I'm probably wrote that one just because I'm jealous. I'm losing my hair, and I'd struggle to get anywhere near that level of hirsuteness. Look, they're great for your legends like the Rob Kras of this world, and Michael Wardy, and some of the great American trail runners. They look awesome in a beard, but that's probably because they're less, it looks like they're comfortable in their own beard, if that's a sort of an expression, if that makes sense. Whereas what we're seeing now is because they are wearing a beard, you're getting these clean-shaven city slickers who have got a lot of cash and disposable income. They go out to a local running store. Not only do they make a conscious buying decision of which heel to toe drop on their new Hokas or Salomons that they've got to buy, but they've also got the lightest weight watch. They've got the latest... and spend days, weeks, months upsetting their loved ones by trying to grow some sort of scrubbly beard to make the whole composite picture come together beautifully, which is I am an ultra runner. So, yes, look, it's fine for those dirtbaggers, and I don't mind people with beards, but everybody else jumping on that bandwagon, that's a bit crazy in my view.
Okay, then the next one I think is a long-time question that has been asked. Is it okay to wear the race shirt even though I DNF'd? This is the shortest answer in the whole article. No. End of story. Never ask this again. It's not okay.
I was in a race with a guy, and he was, it's, you know, we've all gone through those tough spots, right? Where head's down and, you know, he's walking along trying to make it past this rough patch. And he was wearing the race day shirt, and another runner went by him and he said, "You got to take that shirt off, man. That thing is killing you.
It's bad luck."
I looked back later, not too much longer, and he had taken it off. He tucked it in his shorts and he was moving up the hill. Uh-huh. That was weighing him down.
So it's bad. That's another part. It's bad luck to wear the shirt the day of the race, right?
On race day. Yeah, you haven't earned it yet.
Good point. Well,
That's a really interesting observation. Wearing the race shirt on race day is a very common European practice.
Uh-huh.
So if you run a lot of the big European races, such as the Ultra Tour de Mont Blanc, when you check in and they go through the medical and they go through the gear check, they give you your race shirt, and you will find that majority of people wear the race shirt for the race. It's a pretty bold move because, you know, the usual thing, never try new gear on race day. But it's a very common European practice. But you're right. That one, for me, I laugh at this one because we get asked this on our website and on our Facebook pages regularly. Is it okay to wear the shirt? Of all the things I'll say to you guys today during this conversation we're having, that will undoubtedly be my shortest answer I give any athlete, any trail runner, no. And I guarantee if I see people wearing it, I say take it off. I've got a good friend of mine. He'll know who he is if he listens to this podcast. He insists on wearing his Western State shirt, and he hasn't got the buckle. He didn't even get past mile 30. And boy, if I see photos, he lives on the other side of the planet, and I see photos on Facebook of him wearing that. He receives an almighty shellacking from me on the comments to take that shirt off instantly.
Blast him.
Yeah, that's one rule. That's one rule. You should not wear the shirt. I'm sorry I've upset probably half your audience, but yeah, I know that there's people out there. They tried hard. There's a lot of people want to get behind it. I even saw one the other day, which is fascinating. A guy, he got his race shirt. He started the race. He DNF'd about 30% of the race in. He was seen walking back, you know, his head in hands, despondent. He went out the next day and he ran the race when there was no one there. He ran on the same course and he posted up that he feels that he is now eligible to wear the shirt. And immediately he got the same answer from me, no.
Well, you know, I'd have a little more compassion for that. You're pretty tough, Marcus. I might have gave him a pass on that.
I think that it's very interesting that this is a worldwide etiquette breach.
Yes. What?
It's not just something in the States. It's a worldwide thing. No, you don't wear the shirt.
And you know, that's what's fascinating me too, because as we're talking to Marcus and obviously a long, long ways away, there's so many similarities and things that are common between these two locations that you wouldn't even know we were separated by more than, you know, 100 miles.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty cool.
And that's the great thing about it, guys, is there are among the 18 dumb things that we say and do, majority of them resonated. I actually, the greatest observation Dan and I had when the article was written is that we were waiting with bated breath. Now, we're reasonably smart in the way when we release our articles, we sort of look at where we're going to get the most traffic and readership and who's it going to resonate with, because people are bombarded with thousands of bits of information every day and we want people to read it. It's you know, it's our sweat and passion. And we knew that when we released the article that day, it would still pick up a big chunk of the American audience from the day before, because we're obviously a day ahead of you guys. And we sat there with bated breath going, we're about to have the Americans unload on us, because a previous article I'd written, which was the 25 most influential people in trail running, had gone fairly viral about 4 months earlier, and it really polarized the American audience, and it got us a lot of very, very anti-commentary, because they believe certain American runners were much more heralded and should be put on more pedestals than we thought. And that was, again, going back to the fact that Dan and I have a very strong opinion of things. So we were waiting with bated breath when this article was released, the 18 dumb things. And the interesting thing is that the Americans had probably the greatest sentiment and agreement in what we'd written. So which is why I'm talking to you guys. You guys, we resonated, we sort of clicked on the same level. There was a number of things there that were very, very similar. In fact, it was our local, it was people in the next city, the next biggest city to Sydney is Melbourne. It was people we know very well who took the greatest offense to this article. Not the Americans, not the Europeans, definitely not the Asians. A lot of them didn't get the humor across most of the other nations. But it was the Australians who took this article more seriously than the Americans. And Dan and I were giggling at this because we actually sometimes, you know, in a mischievous way that we have some nights when we're chatting about what we're going to write about, we actually know that we can probably wind up the average American quite quickly. That's the British and Australian in us. And you guys embrace the article more so than our own Australians, which is interesting because I think it sort of gets back to the serious nature of the point. I think we're probably starting some cases, some people taking themselves too seriously.
Hey, what percentage of your audience is American versus European versus Australian? Do you have kind of a feel for that?
Yeah, look, the article is let me start again. Ultra 168 is read by nearly 80% of our audience is overseas. Around about 60% of that is the US market, followed by Spain, France, Germany, Scandinavia, the Brits, they're big followers. So, yes, you guys are actually a larger part of our audience than the good old Australians. And we sometimes forget that, being on the bottom end of the world, you know, days travel from anywhere else, we sometimes forget that most people reading us are not Australians. The trail running community in Australia is small. We're a nation of only 22 million people, of which we have football codes and rugby and cricket and tennis and golf is way more dominant sports. So, yeah, look, we're small in that respect in terms of our Australian readership. So I'd say America is definitely our biggest target audience, and we do love talking to our American brethren because we do have so many similarities.
Yeah, yeah. So down in Australia, do you say on your left or on your right when you want to pass on the trail?
We tend to, we say, that's a good question.
they say, oi!
Yeah, it's like, g'day guys, how are you? And before you know it, because we're a small community, everybody knows each other. You can usually tell who's coming up behind you from their breathing or the rustling of their gear and what sort of backpacker they got on. But no, we usually say, I'm passing on the right. We tend to pass on the right.
Mm. We're left passers over here.
Are you?
We are?
Yeah. But then, as you know, our water goes down the plug hole in the opposite direction. And, it depends on a whole bunch of other things, and you need a physicist to answer that question. But no, the water doesn't go down the plug hole differently here.
All right.
No, we don't walk around with kangaroos hopping down the street, and no, we aren't being bitten by snakes every 5 minutes. But most of the American runners who are traveling here in the next few weeks to race in the town that I'm currently talking to you from now do send me some very bizarre requests. I've had a number of your most elite trail runners say, I would really love to come and race in Australia, Marcus. Thank you for the invite, but I'm really worried about being bitten by a snake.
So let's talk about snakes. Are there a lot of deadly snakes down there? I've seen some colorful looking snakes in some pictures, and that's about as close as I want to get to any snake. I have a what is snake phobia? Is there such a thing? What is that called? An official
term? I'm sure it's
term.
A long word.
Yeah. I don't like snakes.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Tell me about your snakes.
You and I are the same. I'm so scared of snakes. And there will be days when I won't go running because I know it's warm enough for them to come out. I will not go into a particular trail because I know it hasn't been cleared with bushfires or anything, and so the grass is up sort of above neck height, and so I'm paranoid of snakes.
Yeah.
Look, we do have deadly snakes, but you can guarantee you're more likely to be run over by a crazy mountain bike, or you're going to trip over your own ego out on the trail and do yourself more damage than you will be by bitten by a snake. I've not seen a lot of snakes this season, even though it's been a fairly warm, humid summer here in Australia. They are around. I mean, there are millions of snakes, and every one of them can kill you within a matter of minutes if you want to believe the hype. But the likelihood of actually being generally caught up in some form of snake encounter. Look, I ran Western States a few years ago. I ran into a rattlesnake. I saw bears. I heard mountain lions. I was more scared running in your country than you should be running over here.
Yeah, well, we're not going to clear any of that up. It's very dangerous over here.
We have gangs here.
Yeah, yeah.
Dangerous gangs.
There is one thing we do have to warn all visitors about, and that is the drop bears. And if your listeners are wanting to know what a drop bear is, just Google it. But ultimately, it's a sort of it resembles a killer koala that drop out of the trees on you when you least expect it and savage you. And for those people who are listening to this who know that the drop bear doesn't exist, it's just a fallacy like the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot.
The jackalope.
Hey, Sasquatch is real. You know, our trail running friends up in the Northwest will attest to that.
Yeah.
Hey,
it's actually Rob Krar.
Yeah, that's right. That's that
without
beard.
A shirt.
Yeah, $1,500 of Salomon gear wearing.
Hey, speaking of Salomon and different vendors or manufacturers, what's the hottest thing on the trail right now? What's the hottest manufacturer out there on your end?
That's a good question. Look, I think the brands and the trends in emerging brands is really at probably a real melting point right now. I think if you look at what Dan and I do every year, we do a major gear survey. And our biggest race here in Australia that brings in the biggest trail running community is the North Face 100. So we survey the 1,000-plus participants every year. Salomon still dominates in the backpack arena. I think 80% of runners at the last audit were wearing a Salomon backpack. We're seeing brands like Ultimate Direction and Ultra Aspire. They're starting to break through, but ultimately, if you go into your average trail running store, most will walk out with a Salomon backpack. Clothing, that's really down to individual taste. Some people want to resemble their European heroes and idols like Kilian Jornet. So they'll wear head-to-toe, skin-tight, bright-colored Salomon gear or similar North Face gear. And then others want to be a little bit more controversial, a little bit, you know, non-compliant. And so there'll be a blend. But then you get to the real debate that still goes on, and something that will light up our website quicker than anything is any form of shoe discussion.
Yeah.
So yes, we're seeing, you know, the perception is that everyone's wearing either big maximalist shoes like Hokas, or they're wearing this sort of, you know, cutting the soles off like an Anton Kropitschka does, and wearing lightweight minimal shoes. We're seeing the mighty debate over shoes. And then most recently, we're seeing wearable technologies. People who can't get a reception or can't get Wi-Fi signal on their new iPhone or their new Suunto or Garmin watch because they can't get their Strava segment uploaded on the fly. That's causing no end of debate. And you only have to see what happens when the major service providers like Suunto or Garmin, when their websites are down and runners can't upload their latest workout, the comments there are worth reading because they would make an incredible story about society and people's urgency to get the latest King of the Mountain uploaded. So there's a lot of debate goes on about the latest technology. Ultimately, what we've seen over the years is this amazing craze and obsession with traveling as light as you possibly can, to the detriment of your own safety in the mountains. We see people going in and asking to the nearest gram, what does this jacket weigh? What does this shoe weigh? And ultimately, it's the same as in cycling. It's just parodying what we see in road racing. People riding $15,000 bikes. They've shaved 700 grams in weight off of their bike by having everything switched to carbon and titanium. And then you look at their midriff, and they've probably got about 5 or 6 kilos on their belly that they could easily lose. But hey, there's nothing to talk about there, is there? I mean, that's and it's the same thing we're seeing in trends in clothing and shoes and technology in trail running is we've got to have the lightest possible. And then they end up carrying maybe 2 liters of extra water that they don't need in their backpack, or 10 you know, energy bars and gels that they never even consume. And all of that adds up. So it's quite funny, really. We obsess over the minutiae and sometimes lose sight of the big picture. And again, that's what spawned the whole article.
Yeah, yeah. So that really kind of leads to number 9, which is, this is impacting my personal brand. So tell us about that, my personal brand.
Oh, this looks like it's a good one. Marcus is laughing.
Yeah, look, this one makes Dan and I laugh. We are actually even contemplating getting some shirts made up with hashtag personal brand and running. I think this is really, I think this is an interesting one. This one's an interesting one at a sociological level. This one's an interesting one at the power of social media and media in general. But I'm amazed that runners themselves, they might sign with a local sports store to get some free gear. And then next thing, they have their own blog. And before they know it, they've got a website like Ultra 168. And they think they're a big cheese in the whole industry. And then they start to behave differently. And this is what we've seen. We've seen people who talk to you on different levels. I've got friends who I met through running who go and set up their own running website or that's fine. I'm not here to control what other people do. But when people start putting athlete pages together and they will only talk to me through their athlete page because it's about building their personal brand, I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, we have jumped the shark when it happens, like, you know, at that level. And so when you start seeing people who struggle to understand what a personal brand actually means and how to deal with the sort of newly elevated status, it all gets out of control really quickly. And Dan and I, as sort of professional marketers over the last sort of, you know, combined industry knowledge that we've got over the last 20, 30 years of working, is that brands themselves are as guilty as the runners themselves in managing their personal brand. And so whilst we see the fallout as athletes, you know, it's going to happen when an athlete finally gets tested for drugs. How will that brand and how will that athlete deal with themselves? So, yeah, look, the personal brand thing makes me laugh because people have actually said it to me. He said, look, Marcus, I think what you said about me on those comments the other day, you've had a genuine impact on my personal brand. I find that offensive. And I just look at them and go, well, you know, maybe I have. And maybe that's sort of a wake-up call you need.
Maybe you should change brands.
Well stated. What do you have there, Scott?
You know, I like this one because I think it's something that has, at least in our neck of the woods, has really become a big thing, and that's FKT. Mm. Probably a year and a half ago, I didn't even know what an FKT is, and now I think that website has just exploded. What I thought was hilarious is Marcus's way that he describes FKT. I don't want to read it because I think you can explain it a lot better.
Are you saying it's poorly written, Scott?
No, it's extremely well written and hilarious. Right. I don't want to kill it with my American accent.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, this is another one. I think this one for me is this goes back to a number. I think there's a sort of common thread amongst all 18 of these dumb things in that it's all about people either wanting to elevate their opinion of themselves and or get recognized for superhuman achievements. And FKTs, I think, are very much the same. This one was born out of my passion, and every Australian will know this who's listening, is backyard cricket is a big deal. You go around to people's backyard and you play cricket. That's what happens. But you play on their own rules. So people have different backyards. Some people have a swimming pool. Some people have a garage. Some people have, you know, ornaments in their garden. And so, you know, if you hit the ball and it hits a certain ornament, you get an extra number of points. That's just the rules. We all love it, but ultimately you can be the hero in your own backyard, but ultimately you're not really challenging. You're not playing it, you know, the World Series level cricket or baseball or rugby. So FKTs are interesting. There are some genuine FKTs. I'm not taking anything away from some of the elite, you know, Rob Kraar's running around, you know, rim to rim. That's a genuine FKT. But I think when people start, you okay, you can still hear me.
Oh yeah, we've got you.
Sorry, this is some traffic. That's all right.
Hello.
have that gentleman sit down. Put him on the podcast.
Ask him if he has an FKT.
How's his personal brand?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think the interesting thing around FKTs is the convoluted FKTs we're starting to see. People looking at routes up different mountains and going, well, that's fine. That's the obvious route to the top and back again. But I'm going to go via the lolly store and I'm going to go via this, you know, little backyard rat run that I've got where I walk my dog. And I'm going to call that an FKT. And until someone beats it, I am number one in my own backyard. And I think this one here is we're seeing an exploding trend in Australia of this. We're seeing people going out and doing some amazing achievements, but we're seeing more people going out and running a route, claiming an FKT and saying, well, you know what? I'm the best in the world at this. Yes, you are, because you're the only person in the world who's done it. Quite frankly, that's great. And I will put, you know, as Dan and I frequently say, whenever anyone sort of slightly upsets us, we come out with a classic line every time is, your medal's in the post.
Awesome.
This is a great article, and Marcus, we appreciate you joining. Those who are listening, go read this article. It's on ultra168.com. It's the 18 dumb things ultra runners say and do. Peruse their website. There's a lot of good information. There's some good race reports. There's just a lot of good information there. I had a lot of fun looking around on the site.
Oh, that's really good to hear, guys, and I'm glad that you know, Dan and I do this as just a passion. We have day jobs. We've got Dan's got a big family. He's got about to have another member of the family. You know, we do it just to have a bit of fun. Sometimes we might cross the line, but quite frankly, nearly every one of the things you read on our website, we're guilty of making the same mistakes ourselves. So if we can't laugh at ourselves, then who can we laugh at? So that's the fun and humor behind these articles. But ultimately, 90% of our website is fairly informative. There's a lot of good stuff in there. But every so often when we feel the pressure cooker of trail running getting a little bit too big for its own boots, we feel that's the perfect release is once every 3 to 6 months, we'll throw a little bit of a hand grenade into the community and see who gets hit by the collateral damage. And I love that. That's what we're there for. We always have that opinion of the sport.
You know, we started the conversation, whether we had hit the record button or not, that you said that for you, for Dan and yourself, it's really about running. And if this ever gets in the way of running, then that you know what's most important. You love the trail, you love the community, and you never want to give that up. Would you say that this has enhanced your running experience, that you have embraced the sport, it's become larger and bigger and better than ever because of 168, or has it been somewhat of a distraction for you at times?
It's a bit of both. I mean, you can't have the best of both worlds. I mean, we spend on average between 20 hours a week. Dan and I are fairly slick at writing. We can get articles out really quickly, but it has also brought us into some conflict with people and with brands and with even with some countries. So it does consume a lot of our time, but ultimately I feel, and I think it's important for anyone in a position where you have a voice and people are willing, I'm amazed at how many people are willing to listen to what Dan and I have to say. We are very privileged and we will never take that for granted. And anybody who we may have offended down the road, I'm always happy to have a beer with them. I will always tell them straight. That's just my opinion. If you don't like it, fine. There's plenty of other websites to go and read. But ultimately, what you see is what you get. And Dan and I have frequently said, because this is not our living, we do it out of the love. We like to give back, because I've had some people take me under their wing when I was first started out in trail running. I didn't know which direction to go in, and they took their time to spend with me, and I think that's just fair. You know, Dan and I, we're lucky. We get it. We do get this exposure. We do get things offered to us that other people don't, and we will never squander that, and I hope that carries on. And if it ever gets too much for us, Dan and I will just press the button. It will get switched off, and unless you've got an archived version of that article, it will probably disappear into the ether like everything else. So, you know, today's fish and chip wrapper is, you know, oh, sorry, I'll start that again. Today's news is, you know, tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper. So it's sort of, we're quickly discarded. Everybody wants to consume knowledge really quickly, and we're only relevant while we're relevant. So I don't want it to ever come between us. As we keep saying, Dan and I, whenever it gets too much and people are on the attack, we just say it's only running.
Awesome. Marcus Warner, thank you so much for spending some time sharing some of your thoughts, sharing these 18 things ultra runners say
dumb
and
things.
Do. Dumb things, yes.
Dumb things. And I'm going to have to say,
yeah,
I went through this,
yes, sir,
and more than half of these I've done.
They apply to you as well?
Heck yeah. At one point,
I got the other nine. So thank you so much. And anytime you're out in this direction and you want to meet up and do a run, need a place to crash, you know, we're volunteering our spot for you, Marcus, and you and Dan. So thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
And we'll play a game of backyard cricket.
Yeah, we'll go knock out a couple FKTs, all right? I've got a route that nobody's done yet.
You guys, good luck with it all. I love everything you do, and it's been great chatting, and it's so nice to share in some similarities and have a laugh along the way. And good luck with growing the beards, and we look forward to seeing you, Dan, under. I'll come and take you out on some of our favorite trails where we know there's a fairly heavy snake content, so we won't surprise you. We'll let you know what you're in for. But no, look, it's been great chatting and really enjoyed this last hour we spent together. Awesome fun.
Great. Now, Trail Runner Nation, go out in 168.
Moss.